Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about what happens when they deny a warranty claim on your car because they claim you abused it, misused it, or failed to maintain it. And this is a fairly common phone call I get at my office. Someone says they bought a brand new car, they drove it for a while, and the engine blew up. The transmission scattered, the differential grenaded, whatever. Something went wrong with the car or the vehicle. They took it to the dealership. Dealership tears it apart and goes, well, you know, here's the problem. Your engine blew up. Your transmission scattered. Your differential grenaded. But we're not going to cover it because we think that you did this by abusing the vehicle or misusing the vehicle, or you failed to maintain the vehicle. Therefore, it's not a manufacturer's defect. And this is a strange situation because when they say this to you, it's never a $50 part. It's always an expensive fix, $9,000 or something to fix whatever's gone kaplooey on your vehicle. So people call and they say, Steve, what can we do here? And I explain to them, I say, well, here's the problem. They have the right to deny a claim if what they're saying is true. But they've got to be able to prove it. And the easiest way to get around this argument is to try to work on that issue, the proof issue, of who's really at fault here. So the interesting thing is this all backs up to warranty law, which comes from the Uniform Commercial Code. And the warranty law, of course, covers all, you know, goods sold in America that come with warranties. And then, of course, if it's a consumer good, the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act kicks in. If it's an automobile, it's a lemon law claim because all 50 states have got lemon laws. And interestingly, the lemon law, the MAGMOS, and the UCC all have a lot of overlaps. And one of the ways they overlap is both MAGMOS and the lemon laws say that if you abuse, misuse, or fail to maintain your vehicle, the manufacturer is not liable for things that happen to the vehicle because that's not a manufacturing defect. So the question then becomes, who's got to prove what? Okay, and this is important to understand. When I taught law school, I had my students read a case out of Alaska. And interestingly, it's the only case I ever saw out of Alaska that made any sense to people below the, you know, the frozen tundra. I've got friends who are up in Alaska. Hey, John. And the funny thing is that it's an important case because this court in Alaska, the Alaskan Supreme Court, did a great job of explaining this. So it's called Universal Motors versus Waldock. And Waldock is the plaintiff who had a bad car. And the suit arose over the refusal of a car dealer and a manufacturer to authorize repairs on a car under warranty because they came to the conclusion that the damage to the car's engine was caused by consumer abuse. And this is a BMW that a guy named Thomas Waldock purchased in 1983. It was a 320i from Universal Motors, Inc. It was warranted to be free from defects in materials and workmanship for a period of 3 years or 36,000 miles, whichever occurs first. And within that period, the engine failed. And he took it to dealership, and Dave Pennington, the district manager of BMW of North America, denied authorization to repair the car under warranty, and Universal was bound by that decision. But they said, look, we're not going to pay for the repairs in this because it wasn't our fault. It was your fault. And they're at that impasse. So I've had people call my office. They say, Steve, I was accused of not doing oil changes. We were accused of putting bad fuel in our vehicle. We were accused of hot rotting the vehicle. And in this case, they claim that he over-revved the engine. And Waldock vehemently disputed BMW's contention. He claimed that while driving the car at a low speed with the engine at low RPMs, the engine emitted a gear-crunching noise. Ceased operation and would not restart. That gear crunching noise is always a concern. I'm always interested in how you describe a sound of a mechanical failure. I had a car I was driving in Los Angeles back in 1989 that made the exact same sound that you'd get if you jammed an aluminum baseball bat into a rotary lawnmower. Okay, imagine that sound. That's the sound the transmission made. But I digress. After Universal and BMW refused to fix the car under warranty, Waldock filed the lawsuit. And he said, you know, I didn't abuse the vehicle, therefore you guys have got to fix the car. And they came to an argument over who's got to prove what. And the Alaskan Supreme Court laid this out perfectly. So here's the interesting thing. At trial, Waldock's expert testified, he actually had several, testified that the engine failed because of a problem with the engine's timing, caused by a damaged timing tensioner. So I'm guessing that the timing chain or timing belt had a tensioner on it, and the experts were saying that tensioner was wrong or was off and caused some failure in the timing. Universal claimed the engine damage was caused by consumer abuse, and that was their argument. So the issue on which this appeal turns is solely a question of law concerning the burden of proof. Who's got to prove what? So the judge at trial ordered that Universal, if they wanted to prevail, that's the defendants, they had to convince the jury more likely than not that Waldock overrubbed the engine. So in other words, the jury is going to pick a winner between these two competing things, but the manufacturer has got to prove that the guy abused it, not that he didn't abuse it, okay? So it seems like a minor distinction, but it's a big one. It really is a big one. Who's got to prove something, okay? So they have to prove something, the consumer doesn't. Now, it helps his case if he's got evidence that goes his way, but the point is that the jury looks at it and goes, okay, did they prove their case referring to the manufacturer? No, the consumer wins. As opposed to, did the consumer prove his case? No, the manufacturer wins. So the burden of proof on proving the abuse, misuse, or lack of maintenance falls on the manufacturer here, and that's extremely important. So the jury returned a verdict for Waldock, awarded him damages, basically the fair market value of the car, plus incidental damages, plus attorney fees, which looked like they were about twice the cost of the car. And that's a great example of a manufacturer that's putting on a defense with a Pyrrhic victory. At best, even if they won, they would have lost more than twice the value of the car. But they lost. So it's a Pyrrhic loss. I don't know what to call that. So here's the thing. There are two burdens of proof to be analyzed in this case. Waldock must show the existence of the express warranty and that it was breached. The breach caused a loss. The product failed to perform and so on. And then the court said the language in the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act relating to consumer abuse is a classic burden of proof statement, meaning that the warrantor is forced to prove the abuse, misuse, or lack of maintenance. So that shifting burden of proof is what's extremely important in these cases. So what that means is if you go into a dealership and they say, look, we're not going to pay for the repairs on your vehicle because we think you abused it, misused it, or failed to maintain it, that's not a good thing to hear from them. But what you need to then do is immediately put yourself in the mindset of how would I prove that this is not abuse, misuse, and so on, keeping in mind that the standard of proof for you is actually very low, because if you go to trial, you don't actually have to prove it. You simply have to defeat their ability to prove it. So let's suppose they said you didn't change your oil. It's an easy enough one to prove. Do you have receipts? Okay. And hopefully the receipts bear out which vehicle got changed and so on. if they claim that you over-revved the engine, well, you'd have to bring in a mechanic of your own, certified master, hopefully, who can take a look at the engine and determine what caused it to fail. And if they say that you have, say, bad fuel, well, get a sample of the fuel, send it out and have it tested. And the hope is that if you get enough evidence to show that if you go to court on this, you're going to win, you might be able to convince the manufacturer to change its mind on this. And I've actually had that happen. I've been practicing law for 27 years in the state of Michigan, and I've had situations before where we were arguing over an engine failure. And I've got a mechanic, and they had a mechanic. And there was an engine. And we agreed that we'd all go out and watch the mechanics tear it down. And we're all standing around them tearing apart this engine. And their mechanic, when he pulled the heads off, said, oh, there's your problem. And just suffice it to say we won the case. And the case didn't proceed any further. Because once the engine was torn apart, it became abundantly clear that my client's position was the correct one. But the weird thing is that before they actually yanked the engine apart, we'd been told, no, that's not what's going on here. Our mechanics have looked at your vehicle. They've tried to start the engine or done whatever they could do, but they haven't opened it up and looked inside of it yet. And you know, an engine's a funny thing. It's not like you can take an X-ray of it and go, oh, you know, I spotted a spot on the third piston. You know, no, you know, sometimes you got to pull them apart. And there's often a cost associated with dismantling an engine. And sometimes they'll say, well, we don't even want to pay this cost to dismantle the engine. You may have to pay that cost. But the point is that it's going to come down to who can prove what. And obviously, if you pull the engine apart and it shows that it was a mechanical failure, document it. And if you have to, contact an attorney. Say, well, we're going to file this lawsuit under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. or the lemon law, if it qualifies under the lemon law as well. But the point simply is that the burden of proof shifts to the manufacturer, and the manufacturer's got to prove that you abused it, misused it, or failed to maintain it. And if they can't prove it, especially in the face of good evidence on your part, then they're going to lose that. They'd be wise to change their decision. So what you're going to do, like I said, when they deny it, investigate it as best you can. If you have to get a mechanic involved, pay the mechanic to get involved. Save the evidence. If there's something funky in the oil pan, save it. If there's broken shards of things, save them. And then document the case. You might want to consider having an attorney write a letter on your behalf. I don't normally write threat letters, but this is one where it might make sense to write a letter that says, hey, look, I'm an attorney. I do MAG-MOS claims, and I've examined this evidence. Here's the photographs. Here's an affidavit from a certified master mechanic. And I suspect that even your guys, if they look at these documents and this evidence, will agree with us. But if not, we're going to file a suit under MAG-MOS. We'll see you in court. And like I said, I've gotten cases to settle after I simply got the other side to look at the evidence. The problem is the evidence was buried deep inside the engine. So that's how the situation works. I'll put a link to the case of Universal Motors versus Waldock for the two or three of you out there who like to read an Alaskan case that talks about the MAG-MOS. But it actually does a very good job of it. I like this case. So questions or comments, fire them away. Otherwise, talk to you later. Bye-bye.